They sat and looked at it and burned it into their memories. How will it be not to know what lands outside the door? How if you wake up in the night and know the willow tree's not there? Can you live without the willow tree? How can we live without our lives? How will we know it's us without our past? John Steinbeck, The Grapes of Wrath. They said to demolish it, this yellow house with the words "Keep Out" and "We Love You, Grandma" spray painted on the front of it. This house that a mile-wide tornado rendered unlivable. 1 month later, they tell me to tear it down. Put wood and debris in one pile, metal in the other. How can I do that? How can I help destroy what the man sitting in the wheelchair off to the side says he's lived in for 30 years? Worked 4 jobs, paid it off 5 years ago. That's a new $8,000 roof. Pushed my wife into the bathroom when the wind snatched my TV out the window. Fell in behind her. We're both okay. Okay? How can he be okay? Alive, yes, but how is he not broken? I watch him from the corner of my eye as I pick up drywall and splintered 2x4s, carry them to the pile. We need to get done quickly, they say, so we can move on to the 2-story brick home this afternoon. So many people need help. But I don't feel like I'm moving quickly. I pause to take pictures. I hope the people in the street hugging the old man don't feel I'm insensitive. I just want to capture this moment. I want to remember what it feels like to add to the devastation. I watch as the excavator's teeth bite into the roof, pull out a wall, and drop it where I and 20 other people in red shirts can sort through it and move it to the curb. The curb where the city will later come and haul the debris off in black trailers. Haul off the wood, metal, and red plastic hanger I'm not sure where to put, so I add it to the wood pile. Haul off the can of oatmeal I see still sitting on its shelf as a wall is stripped away. Haul off the red wagon with a broken wheel and the paper picture that says Mother. I see a plastic sack with a puzzle still in its box. I almost add it to the pile of shingles, nails, and torn wallpaper, but something makes me pause. I like puzzles. I suddenly feel a connection to this family I've never met before, to this man in the wheelchair whose hands are shaking as he tries to open a bottle of pills for what looks like his daily medication. He said to tear it down, that he didn't want anything else. Already got everything out that he wanted, what was left anyway. So I put the puzzle in the car and the words "pieces of our lives" begin to circulate through my head. Is this what 30 years looks like? I try to picture this street before the monster hit it, but can't. I've never been to Joplin before. So I rake, shovel, and move more pieces to the curb. I get a Gatorade from the people driving around bringing aid to the volunteers. The man in the wheelchair, I still don't know his name and I'm too shy to ask, says he would like one too, so I pick one out from the cooler, loosen the cap for him, and say, "There you go, sir," hoping the kindness in my voice will somehow reach him and let him know I'm hurting too. I go back to work. I take more pictures. I lose a water bottle from the pack attached to my waist and feel silly looking for it amidst the fragments of these people's lives. Time must have passed pretty quickly because suddenly the house is completely torn down and they're saying it's time to go to the church for lunch. I shake the old man's hand before I leave and try to smile. I hear someone else say God bless and invite him to church. I hope he comes. They say the services have been full since this disaster. That afternoon, we pass the hospital with its gaping windows and its 10-plus stories of rebar, mortar, and brick that was somehow moved 3 inches off its foundation. I take a picture and shake my head in wonder at the sheer power of the storm. We drive to what was obviously a nicer part of town, but even the 2- and 3-story homes with their acre lots weren't impenetrable against that ravenous mouth. Roofs and sometimes entire rooms have been torn off the houses and spit out somewhere else. These people had access to basements, though, so maybe this neighborhood at least didn't add to the 150-plus death toll. The house we're set to demolish this afternoon belonged to a doctor's family. We're told he's donating all of his insurance money to the Churches of Christ disaster relief team that we're volunteering with. Nearly the entire second story has been ripped off the house, and there's only a gaping pile of rubble where the front door should have been. There's no family waiting to watch the demolition on the sidewalk of this home. There's also a lot more material things left behind, including, they say, a $50,000 wedding ring the owners couldn't find. I don't know about that. But I do see a black car seat and a pile of torn children's books laying on the ground outside. As I walk inside, I see an unused box of swim diapers, cleaning supplies, magazines, pillows, and glass from the French doors that lead out to what was once a well-manicured lawn. I walk upstairs to the second story that we have to tear down by hand before the small excavators and bobcats can safely demolish the rest. Someone finds an unbroken, unscratched green pot and decides to keep it. Later, it's thrown over the side by someone who didn't know. I see a brand new toy cart that could have been cleaned up and kept, and I start to judge. I think, maybe it's because they didn't live here for 30 years. Do they even know what it's like to stay somewhere longer than 5? Maybe it's because they have the money to replace what others find irreplaceable. Then I find a toy train in the same Brown Bear, Brown Bear book that I read to my son, except this one has been soaked by the rain and I have to throw it over the side. I put the train in my pocket, though, and start to tear down drywall while dodging 30 other people doing the same thing. At this site, we talk and laugh while we work. There's no one watching here. Most of the groups who have come together to level this home are from out of town. Young, old, male, female, we're all working in the heat and the dirt and wearing masks and getting tetanus shots to protect us from the rusty nails other people have stepped on and the bacteria brought in by the storm that's caused some people to die. So we're watching where we step and being careful not to go over the side with the 6-foot boards we're throwing out the one window still left in the wall. And maybe we have to laugh to keep a grip on the other emotions. Maybe these people were going to live here 30 years. Who knows? Later, I go downstairs to help rake debris into piles so others can put it into wheelbarrows and haul it to the curb. And I find a room I hadn't seen yet. It must have been a playroom because I see toys, books and games, and a numbered 0-10 board puzzle that's similar to the one my son has. I find a lightning car lying amongst dirt, crumbled insulation, and fake stone logs from the mini fireplace still standing in one wall, and my chest tightens. My son loves Lightning McQueen. I take a picture. I also find a Mater 24-piece puzzle that I carry out with me once I'm done raking, and I offer to go to the car for snacks in hopes that no one sees me keeping it. Why would she want a puzzle? Can't she afford to buy one if she wants it? My husband said he later found the lightning car and put it in his pocket too. And despite the spray-painted sign on the neighboring house that says looters will be shot, I don't feel like I'm looting. These are pieces of these people's lives and somehow simultaneously pieces of my own. And I find myself wondering if I would have left it all behind if given the option just so I wouldn't have to live with the memory. Because now I too am huddled in the concrete safe room in the basement holding on to my children who don't understand what's happening. I'm telling them it's going to be okay and trying not to let them see that I'm scared because I don't want them to feel the fear that's threatening to consume me. I hear the wind and the board snapping and I stifle a scream and my husband puts his arm around us all and we clench our eyes and pray. Then I picture myself hearing the quiet and climbing upstairs only to see entire walls missing and rubble where my children's rooms once stood. And I'm no longer judging this family. I feel like I'm somehow a part of them. As we're about to head home and new friends are saying their goodbyes, I notice a woman in a black shirt standing apart from everyone else. Something in her eyes and the way she's looking at the house, which now has the second story completely removed, makes my husband instinctively ask if this was her home. As she nods her head, she starts to cry. I say, "I know you don't know me," reach out my arm, and she hugs me back. All I know to say is I'm sorry, but she seems to understand. And sometimes that's all people need to hear. And sometimes all they need to feel is someone rejoicing when they rejoice and weeping when they weep. And sometimes all they need to see are people who exhibit their faith and, in the words of my grandmother, put feet to their prayers simply by doing the work they themselves don't have the strength in that moment to do. After all, that's what keeps us all from being broken. That's what allows us to put the pieces of our earthly lives back together. Faith, hope, and love are what keep us whole.